No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This is episode 170, and I'm your host, Jess Root, with my co-host, Seth Cox, on the line. I'm from CardsWire.com, the editor for CardsWire.com, USA Today, Sports Media Group's NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. Seth from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, we missed a week, but I think we've got plenty to talk about tonight, don't we?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's new. It's a little bit different, and you know what? It was three quarters of really good football, and then one quarter of, oh no, this isn't happening, is it? So, but in the end, it all worked out, and I think you can leave happy and not really that concerned yet.
So a lot has happened since the last time we were on the air. The Cardinals lost to the Philadelphia. We didn't want to talk about the game anyway. The Philadelphia Eagles beat down the Cardinals 31-7. Carson Wentz looked fantastic, threw four touchdown passes, three in the first quarter. And the Cardinals just couldn't get anything going early. And that was two games ago. And then they made the big move of trading for Adrian Peterson. We didn't get to talk about our thoughts on that. So we'll do a little bit of that on this show. But then the Cardinals this week with a healthy offensive line and the debut of Adrian Peterson, they kind of roll offensively, jump out to a 31-0 lead and rush for a gazillion yards, it feels like. And they pick up a 38-33 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to pull to 3-3 and really kind of make everyone feel a little bit better because of how they looked offensively, and now they enter a stretch of three straight games against the NFC West. They travel. They've got two road games. They go to London. They got the bye. They travel to San Francisco, and they come home on short rest to play the Seattle Seahawks. So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode, in this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're going to talk about Adrian Peterson. We're going to talk about the win. We're going to talk about some depth chart changes that are happening, that have happened or could be happening, as well as the next stretch of games. Just how important is it? And look ahead to the matchup against the Los Angeles Rams this weekend in London. But before we get started, you, the listeners of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we are looking for some feedback from you. So if you could help us out by taking a couple of minutes out of your day, even just do it right now while you're listening to the show, unless you're driving, then pull over the site or wait till you get home, then pull it up. If you could visit podcastlistener.com/CRED. Again, podcastlistener.com/CRED. So we can get some feedback about you, the listeners, and the messages that we have on this show and the sponsors that support this show to give valuable feedback as to the types of information and things that you guys get from us. So if you would do that, it would be a great help. Podcastlistener.com/CRED. If you haven't already done so, of course, you can find us on iTunes. Go ahead and subscribe to iTunes, all you Apple users, Apple Podcast listeners. Subscribe to the Rise of CRED podcasts on Apple Podcasts. And go ask, and we'd love it as well if you gave us a great rating, a five-star rating we wouldn't complain about. And Android users, you can find us on a number of podcast platforms such as Stitcher Radio. Subscribe to us there and get those episodes sent to you right away. You don't have to search for them. Well, let's go ahead and get started, Seth. And we're going to talk about Adrian Peterson to start. Adrian Peterson. So how surprised? I mean, I was on vacation with my family last week. We were in California hitting some theme parks, and we were about to leave for the morning. We were taking a tour to Hollywood. And before we left, all of a sudden, I see this tweet from Adam Schefter, and we have a trade. And I say, "Hey, what? Adrian Peterson? Wait, what?" This has been something that, you know, Cardinals fans wanted him when he came out in the draft in 2007. There was all sorts. If you guys remember on Revenge of the Birds, the offseason of 2015, leading before the 2015 season, all the drama and rumors about Adrian Peterson perhaps being traded or getting cut and signing with the Cardinals. And now the Cardinals pick him up for a conditional sixth-round pick. When you heard the news, what were your expectations? And, you know, just how shocking was it?
It was shocking in the sense that it seemed like Hail Mary is not the right word, but it just seemed like it seemed like an odd fit. But then, you know, we've talked about this before. You go back and in Bruce Arians' kind of style of offense, what Chris Johnson offered didn't really make sense anymore. So to get a guy like Adrian Peterson, who's more comfortable between the tackles, can be kind of the grinder that, you know, we talked about it, that 15 to 20 carry a game guy, and help take some pressure off the passing game. It all made sense when you think about it in that way. It's a low rent investment as well. I mean, like you said, a conditional six-round pick. I mean, what does it go up to at worst? Or is it top out at a six? I don't even really know.
I think it tops out at six is probably how it goes. It's a six-round pick, or maybe it ends up being a seventh or nothing, depending. I'm sure it'll be a six-round pick, whatever the conditions happen to be.
So, yeah. So when you look at it from that point of view, it made sense. And I don't know what the future holds for an Adrian Peterson, David Johnson kind of shared backfield. It's hard to imagine a 33-year-old backup running back on the roster for $3.5 million next year, but that's a bridge we can cross when we come to it. And so for this year, for the small investment that they were able to make, it made sense. And then my expectation was, okay, he'll get those, you know, obligatory 12 to 15 carries in game one where they can run, you know, just some power offense and he can follow his blockers and kind of make that 3 to 5, you know, 3 to 3 to 3.5 yard per attempt type of thing. And man, they came out and they really made it known that we didn't trade for Adrian Peterson for 2 weeks from now or 3 games from now. We traded for Adrian Peterson for now. And they made that statement early and often. And it was really interesting to watch. And it, you know, it was honestly fun to watch.
I don't think there's any doubt that it was worth the acquisition. I mean, it couldn't have been worse. I mean, the running game was a disaster. David Johnson didn't even look good in week one, but they've been losing pieces off the offensive line week after week, barely holding on, basically just making it through to the next game. Chris Johnson looked good in his first game and then looked slow and unable to break tackles or to elude people. There was no reason not to do it. And the fact that he became available just was – and what I liked about, you know, and Peterson, a lot of people think, thought he was washed up. I mean, 27 carries in the 4 games he played with New Orleans, 82 yards. I mean, 81 yards. So he's averaging right at 3 yards a carry. He hasn't been great in a couple of years. He's had a couple of major surgeries in the last 3 years. But there was one thing that I thought was, it can't be worse. And this, it could only get better. Is the fact that one of the issues that have been having with Chris Johnson is the fact that they weren't getting anything after contact. Now, granted, part of the problem was they were defensive units were getting contact in the backfield, which and in Chris Johnson's defense, he was a little bit salty on Twitter after the fact. He did have some runs called back because of holding. But you get a guy like Peterson who will push forward. He can get more yards. And so at minimum, instead of these, instead of the stop at the line of scrimmage, you're going to get 2 yards instead. And instead of those 2 yard gains, they're going to be 4 or 5. So I didn't see any downside to it. And just the one thing that I concern, like, at his age, he's had some major injuries, and as physically amazing as he is, you hope he holds up. That's the thing. But I mean, we saw what we saw. He had 27 carries for the Saints the entire season. The Cardinals went early and often to Peterson, 4 carries in the first drive. They go for 8 yards. They go for 8 yards. He goes for 11 yards. And then, boom, the 27-yarder for the touchdown. And then that drive kind of set the standard for the rest of the game. He finishes with 26 carries, 134 yards, scores the 2 touchdowns. And it looked like the Adrian Peterson of 2 years ago, of 10 years ago. And can he keep it up? I don't think he's going to do that well every single week. But here's the thing. Joined the lineup, but they got back 2 starters. They got back DJ Humphreys, who is a really good run defender. They got back Alex Boone, and they upgraded. Well, I don't know if they upgraded, but they put Earl Watford in the starting lineup in place of Evan Bain. And what we do know about Earl Watford, run blocking is not really a problem for him. And so you kind of have that. Had they kept Chris Johnson, my guess is the rushing output would have been better. I don't think it would have been 134 yards worth of better, but it was going to be better anyway. And so you have this perfect storm of a hungry running back, physical, who really still has it, if given the opportunity to be a workhorse, and you get the healthy offensive line. It was the perfect recipe for a big production. David Johnson put up big numbers last year, and the offensive line, anyone will tell you around the league, that offensive line was really kind of not good. So you get back what we believed was supposed to be a better offensive line, at least on paper, and you get Adrian Peterson. They should be able to do it. Do I expect that every week? No. But I think we're going to see better than the Chris Johnson Kerwin Williams combo that we've seen so far this season. Wouldn't you imagine?
I would assume so. And the whole thing is this, right? With Adrian Peterson, there's never been a question of his ability as a banger or an in between the tackles type of runner. And what we know of Bruce Arians' offense is that's what he wants. He wants somebody to kind of give him the hard yards and grind out some yardage. And so Adrian Peterson coming in and being able to do that will assist them in that sense. He's not going to average 5.6 yards per carry or whatever it was. But you know what? If he can average 4.5 yards per carry, that's actually better than what David Johnson did last year on a per-carry basis. So maybe over a 11-game stretch in the season, he's a guy that can run for 800 yards and really kind of pick up and save the rushing game offense and make this team two-dimensional again offensively, because I mean, I think calling them one-dimensional would even be kind of over the top at that point.
And here's the thing. A lot of people – this is what Bruce Arians has always wanted to do offensively. He just hasn't had the personnel to do it. If you look over time, what Bruce Arians has been doing offensively with the Cardinals is different than what he's traditionally done. And this is because of here's the reason. Enter Bruce Arians in 2013 when he comes to the Cardinals. What did he say about running backs? They're not there to catch the ball. But what has happened over the last 3-4 years with Andre Ellington and David Johnson? He evolved. He changed. So as stubborn as Bruce Arians is, he has changed a few things. The Cardinals, because of the personnel that they had, it became necessary for them to spread things out. And now he does love to pass the ball, but their base running game has always been a double tight. It's always been that.
It's been important to his how he runs his offense. And that's the other thing that we've always really talked about, that he needs a running game and the ability to utilize that running game to take the pressure off his passing game, because his passing game really is predicated on play action and getting the ball deep down the field. And he hasn't been able to do that this year. And so the beginning of this season was incredibly bleak because there's no semblance of hope for a running game at that point. And so when you saw them, you know, come out this week and really put an emphasis on running the ball, it became better. You saw shades of, you know, it's not going to be 2015's offense. It's just not going to happen. But you saw shades of last year where they ran the ball, you know, 399 times as a team, which was 21st in the NFL. So not terrible. I mean, that's not bad. It's better than the 32nd they were. You know, in 2015, they ran the ball 452 times. You know, that was ninth in the NFL. So that's what he wants to do. He wants to be able to run the football. He doesn't want to be able to, or he doesn't want to have to rely on the passing game to do everything. And so the beginning of this season, it really showed the warts of the team, because he was playing with, I wouldn't even call it a half a deck. He was playing with like a quarter of a deck, because he had one of the worst offensive lines ever created, and then no running game to speak of. And so he had to figure out, all right, well, I have to move the ball somehow. And so it was, well, we'll let Carson throw the ball 50 times a game and hope he doesn't die. So, I'm just glad we're out of that phase, because I felt bad for Palmer at that point.
And well, here, Palmer was, aside from the first couple of games, he started playing well despite all the issues. Now, here's what I liked the best, because the passing production was still there and he only had to throw the ball 22 times. He had nearly 300 yards passing while only throwing 22 passes, which that's what is ideal.
Right. And it's what, you know, I've said for so long about this. It's not a shot at Palmer. He can keep you in games. He can win you games. You can't ask that guy to carry your team for a year. You can't ask him. I mean, we saw it. They were 2-3, basically riding Palmer's arm until it fell off. And their two wins were overtime thrillers against two of the worst teams in the NFL.
Bad
team. I mean, and so, and the offensive output in those two games was pathetic. And so now there is this hope, it's not a known quantity yet, but there's this hope that, okay, this offense can be extremely balanced.
And that's what it was in 2015, because you already gave the numbers. Why were they so prolific offensively? It's because they ran the ball so well. And look at how they ran the ball. They ran the ball with everybody, because Andre Ellington started. He got hurt. Chris Johnson ran really well. Then he got there. Then it was David Johnson. And so they were in the top 10 in rushing in 2015. And guess what? Carson Palmer throws for 4,600 yards, and they put up points like mad because they ran the ball. And that's what we saw, and that's what it led to. Adrian Peterson, is he the answer? I don't know if he's the main reason. Maybe. I mean, it's a combination. The offensive line got healthy, and with that, that helped things. Can you get a better running back? And then boom, explosion.
Right. And it's, you know, like we said, it's probably not something we're not going to expect nearly 200 rushing yards and 300 passing yards a game. They're not going to produce 500, you know, yards a game on offense. They're not going to put up 38 points a game on offense. But if you can be a team that produces, you know, maybe close to 400 yards on offense, maybe you're getting 280 and 120 a game, and then you're able to put up 24, 25 points a game. The problem has become, and I know we're going to get to this, the problem has become, we're to the point where we really do have to ask, is the Cardinals defense actually bad? Not average, not bend but don't break, but bad.
Well, we'll start talking about the game coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We'll wrap up the Adrian Peterson talk. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about specifically the win, the 38-33 win. And that's going to come up next. That we'll talk about everything involved with that. That's next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. The Cardinals get a win, 38-33. It was, you know, it got interesting late, but here's the thing, 31-0 start. They scored on their first four drives. They scored at the first drive in the second half. So they get a 31-0 lead. Things get a little bit dicey later on, but that was more, I mean, I didn't worry about it so much. But that team looked good again. Now, with how they looked, do you think they're back in business? Are they back? Are they now officially, after looking bad for five games, after one win over what's kind of an immature team in Tampa Bay, are we ready to say that they are, that they're in the mix, that they are, that they're in business in the NFC?
You know, I'm not sure they're in business in the NFC, but then all of a sudden this weekend happened and I'm not sure anybody's actually good. So there's a lot of just average teams this year, which is fine. And so you have, when it really looks like it, you have the Eagles, who are obviously a good team at 5-1 now. And we saw that firsthand. I mean, they put a complete shellacking on the Cardinals. But from there, it's like, okay, who's good? Like who would you say are the good teams in the NFC? Atlanta doesn't look like a good team right now. The Rams are 4-2. I don't know. Maybe I still can't buy them. Washington's 3-2. They almost lost a game at home to San Francisco. Green Bay is going to come back down to earth. Minnesota's the one to really watch out for. But then, you know, you have the NFC South, and that's really hard to figure out. Carolina, like we talked about, Atlanta, New Orleans. So it's like, okay, well, the Cardinals are at 3-3. They're one of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They're one of 11 NFC teams with 3 wins or more on the season. So there's a lot of parity in the NFC. So out of 16 teams, 11 have 3 or more wins. So 11 are 500 or better right now. That's incredible. So are they contenders? I don't know if I would say they're contenders for a Super Bowl, but I think they're a contender to be a playoff team still, because I don't really know if anybody's that good yet. But I do think we're going to learn a lot Sunday, because like you said, it seemed like Tampa Bay was immature or overwhelmed than immature in the game. And Los Angeles has done well. I mean, they lost to Seattle at home, but they rebounded and beat a really good Jacksonville defense on Sunday in Jacksonville before they fly out to London to take on the Cardinals. So who are the Rams? Who are the Cardinals? I think we're going to start to figure that out this week. I just think the Cardinals now are actually in it again, because they can have a balanced offense.
And that for me, that's what it was. Not only did they get back to 500, now they seem overall like a pretty mediocre team. And that's what mediocre teams do. They don't lose 2 in a row. They don't win 2 in a row. Cardinals haven't been over 500 since the 2015 season. But here they are. They lose a game. They win a game, but they looked impressive. And that's the thing. The recipe has always been for the Cardinals to start fast. If their offensive starts fast, their defense typically looks good early. And so if they get one or two plays offensively, then things go together. And that's where things start snowballing in their favor. So with knowing that that happened, are they in business? Yes. More than anything, they're in business in the NFC West. I don't care so much about the picture in the entire NFC because I don't know, you know, wild card things, it's so wacko. And still with the fact that the Cards are 2-3 in the NFC give me, you know, it's cause for concern, so we lose some tie breaks that way. But are they in business? Certainly in the NFC West, which makes this next stretch of games, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But for me, they finally look like a good team. And like, even if their wins, they didn't look good. I mean, against Detroit, they look good sometimes, then look bad. Against Indy, they look lost. Against San Francisco, they didn't look good. Against, I mean, Philly, they looked dreadful. They finally looked like they could be a good team or a team on the rebound. Now, here's the thing. The Cardinals got almost all their production from old guys. You got the 32-year-old Adrian Peterson, 134 yards. You had Larry Fitzgerald, who is, again, second in NFL in receptions. He's on pace for 112 catches, over 1,200 yards, and 8 touchdowns. Carson Palmer throws for nearly 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, a pick. He's really effective. Antoine Bethea gets an interception. Tremont Williams gets an interception. Can they keep counting on all these old guys to perform? I mean, is that reasonable?
I think so. I mean, the reality is, as a, you know, we talked about it, but as a team, they are not necessarily built for the future, because I don't know who you can count on for the future, but I do know that in 2017, you can count on Larry Fitzgerald, you can count on Carson Palmer, and it looks like you can count on Adrian Peterson. So I think that's okay. And defensively, you can count on Patrick Peterson. You just have to hope he's healthy. The rest of it is, I mean, I don't know. Like, you would hope that they figure some things out along the defense. It's frustrating with what we're getting from, or I should say not getting, from Robert Kimdiche at this point. You want to see more from him. Hassan Reddick has looked good when he's asked to play. So that's, you know, that's promising. But the defense, it looks like a struggle. But offensively, I think it's okay that you're getting production from those guys, because at least you can know what to expect. Because honestly, we have no idea what to expect from the young guys. And that's what's truly terrifying at this point, is that guys that have been in the system 2, 3, 4 years, you don't know what to expect from them game to game now. And that's what's tough, as whether it's, you know, the Cardinals coaching staff or us as fans, to watch and say, okay, well, who shows up today? And so it's unfortunate, I think would be the right word, that the only guys you can trust are the old guys. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think it's unfortunate because you looked at this as, okay, they're a quarterback away from really maintaining a great pace. And now it's, well, I think they can contend in 2017, and we'll figure out next year.
And for me, the concerns that I have are, I think offensively they might have figured things out. I'm a little concerned about the consistency from the other wide receivers. But again, they didn't get bad play from receivers on Sunday, and it appears that their passing game is going through Larry Fitzgerald now. What was going to be all David Johnson appears it's going to be significantly Larry Fitzgerald. I'm concerned, of course, about the defense if the offense doesn't start off quickly. And that's just kind of how the Cardinals have been. They do well enough against the run. Their streak of games without giving up 100 yards to an individual rusher, it continues. They did give up 100 yards rushing to the Eagles. It's, overall, their rush defense is solid. It's solid. But the middle of the field in the passing game continues to worry me because Tyrann Mathieu is not playing well in coverage. They're giving things up. And then Deion Buchanan, I was really, really pleased with how Buchanan played. It looks like he's finally back. He didn't have anything other than the tackles. He missed a tackle for a loss by, you know, half a yard because he got back to the line of scrimmage. But he looked finally like he looked knew what he was doing out there. Because when Buchanan was struggling in coverage in Philly, Mathieu just continues to be basically invisible in the passing game. Bethel is having his struggles, as we're going to talk about a little bit. You just have to – they need to have both sides of the ball doing enough because the defense isn't good enough, I don't think, to carry the team like we hoped they would, like they could in 2014. They couldn't carry the team, and the offense, when it's bad, is just useless. They look like a bad team, but I think they have things put together. If they can parlay their Tampa Bay performance into a performance on the road, this is really a big test because they do so bad on the road. And this is not only on the road, it's way on the road. And it's a chance for them to get two good games together, string two good games together, which is what we haven't seen in really quite a long time.
No, we haven't. And you know, it's a chance to make a statement within the division. They win this game. They're in second place all by themselves in the division and potentially in a tie for first place. Or actually, they'd be in a lead for first place by the fact that they had played one more game if the Seahawks lose their game this week. And I don't even know who the Seahawks have, so it doesn't really matter. But when you look at it from that perspective, that's great. Like, at worst, if you win this week, you come out as being in second place in the division and head to the bye week heading to San Francisco in a good spot. So that's where the question lies is can your defense find a way to stop a Rams offense that's been really productive and done a nice job in year two with Jared Goff, the first year with Sean McVay. I wouldn't say Goff is a good NFL quarterback, but I would say he's definitely a lot better than the guy that they saw in January of this year when they put up something like 48 points on the Rams in LA. So this is going to be one of those tests where I think we can learn who this team is completely, because it's the second game with Adrian Peterson. You know, I'm assuming and maybe hoping is a better word that we're going to see DJ Humphries, Alex Boone, AQ Shipley, Earl Watford, and Jared Valdir as the starting offensive line again. A productive group. And then, you know, again, what does the defense do? Can the defense step up and make plays? But right now, you know, they're giving up 26.3 points per game, which is fifth worst in the NFL. And that's there's never in Arians, you know, 5 years here, there's never been a team this bad off or defensively. And so I think when we started this year, it was, all right, how fast can they gel together? And can Carson Palmer and the offense stay afloat until the defense gels? Well, now we're getting to nearly the halfway point, and it's getting progressively worse, I would say, defensively. And so now you're saying, okay, well, you've lost Marcus Golden. Your only pass rushing threat right now is Chandler Jones. And by the way, he's been phenomenal. Now all of a sudden, Patrick Peterson's dealing with a quad issue. Your tweet on Sunday was, you know, completely on point about why he was back there returning punts. That was odd, I guess would be the nice way to put it, to have a guy that's nursing a quad injury returning punts when you're up 21 points. And so, you're at a point now where it's like, okay, do we need to make a move? And most fans are going to say, yeah, you need to bench Justin Bethel. Well, is Bethel really the weak link in the secondary? Like, I understand he's given up some big plays, but is he the guy that is allowing the chain moving receptions, or is he just susceptible to being, you know, to giving up a big play? And if you bring in Tremont Williams, who played well in his limited role and had a nice, you know, pick on the goal line that really was the decider in the game, are you going to get the same type of production out of 60 to 70 to 80 snaps from Tremont Williams when he's gotten, I think, maybe 80 snaps total this season? I mean, he's 35. It's not like he's a young guy that was being brought along. It seemed like he's a break glass in case of emergency type guy. And so are we at that emergency point yet? And is it really for Justin Bethel?
So let's explore that more just a little bit after the break. Coming back next on Rise Up Sea, we're going to talk about Tremont Williams, Justin Bethel, and some of the depth chart changes that have happened or could be happening. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Depth chart changes, starting changes. The Tremont Williams, Seth talked about a little bit. Bruce Arians has declared that Tremont Williams needs to play more. And it sounds like he could end up in the starting lineup. And here's the thing. Justin Bethel hasn't been great. He's given up some plays. Has he really been bad? I've always kind of been a Justin Bethel apologist. I'll admit that, because I think the amount of criticism he's gotten over the last couple of years is a little unfair. Now, he did, you know, he's given up some big plays, but it's important to note, Patrick Peterson in six games has been targeted 20 times. Quarterbacks are just not throwing in his direction, which means if they're going to throw to a receiver, it's going to be to Bethel. Do you think Bethel's been as bad as some people say? I mean, he's not been great, but I don't think he's been bad. And aside for the one where AN said that Bethel had no business getting beat, I get that. That was a bad play. I think Bethel mentally checked out a little bit. Like, and I think we saw it on defense. When they got the 31-0 lead, they let up off the gas, and Bethel just got caught doing something stupid, which is something that's plagued him over the years. Does he need to be replaced?
You know, I don't know if he needs to be replaced, and that's where I struggle. And with this team is because, you know, you spelled it out pretty well. Bethel gives up big plays because I just don't think he will ever get, because he's in his, what, seventh year now, sixth year now?
Yes.
I just don't think he's ever going to get the finding the ball portion of the game, which it's fine. It is what it is. You can't coach that. It just has to be an instinctual thing. And we see it, that it's still a problem. It's not as much of a problem, or I shouldn't say that. It doesn't happen as often, but when he gives up a big play, it's 99% of the time he's actually in a position to make the play, and he just never makes a play on the ball because he has no idea where the ball is. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's hard to say to keep him in the lineup, but he's not getting killed out there. It's just that he is susceptible to a big play. And so in a game on a team where you can't give up big plays, that would kind of beget the, okay, well then let's bench Bethel. But on the flip side, you have the Tyrann Mathieu conundrum, where Mathieu is being targeted a lot. I mean, teams are teams are just riding the middle of the field and these underneath routes on Matthew and asking him to make a play in coverage. And he hasn't done it yet.
Here's the stat from Matthew. 6 games this season, 0 broken up passes. He has the 1 interception. He has yet to get his hand on a ball this season, which was, that was his signature thing. Just a couple of years ago, his goal was to, like, he had his goals, you know, stat goals written on his lock, 20 pass breakups. He doesn't have a single one. He's making some tackles. He's had a couple of decent games in terms of making plays, especially when he's been asked to blitz. He's doing all right. But in coverage, he's just been there and not good.
And that's where the problem lies, is I think we cloud our, I'll call it grading, even though, you know, we're not necessarily grading, but we cloud our grading of how players are playing based on big play moments and also what we our preconceived notion of the player. And so Bethel has given up, I think, 4 touchdowns on the season. I could be wrong on that, but I think it's 4 touchdowns on the season. And I don't think he's given one up in like a red zone situation. I think most of them, I shouldn't say that, he did in the first game, but I think most of them have come off bigger plays where he's just not finding the ball, where he's getting beat over the top. And so that's, you know, that happens. Whereas Matthew is getting killed as kind of the guy that they're going after on third down. They're going after on downs where they need a catch and to continue to move the ball. Adam Humphrey on Sunday was basically automatic when Ryan Fitzpatrick threw to him. Cameron Brate, when the middle of the field, when whether it was Branch or Matthew or whoever was covering him, or Dansby or Buchanan for that matter, he was open a lot, and he had a couple drops in the game that, you know, could have been nice plays. And so when you look at it, is Bethel an issue? Yes, because of the way the Cardinals need to win now. But is he the issue that needs to be replaced to fix it? No. And that's where I kind of struggle with this. Oh, let's bench Bethel. Can they upgrade at cornerback too? Absolutely. I have no doubt about that. I don't know if that guy's on the roster, but there's definitely a player out there that they, maybe not this year, but in the offseason, they can make a play for and improve that spot. But to say that it's the only issue, or that if Tremont Williams is now the starter and the defense is magically going to get better, I think is not accurate. And I will say this also. I think if the Cardinals had any semblance of a pass rush outside of Chandler Jones, the entire secondary would look a lot better. But they have Chandler Jones and nothing else right now from a pass rushing standpoint.
It's absolutely true. And if Tremont Williams is going to jump in the lineup, I'm okay. And I on Monday on Twitter, I kind of posed the question. And this is kind of, I know it's a little bit crazy, but what if we move Bethel to the slot? Now, granted, that would make Matthew a part-time player, playing more safety. But what if we took the slot responsibilities away from Matthew and either put Tremont Williams in the slot or Justin Bethel in the slot, where, frankly, Bruce Arians said that Bethel might be better suited and he played well last year. And in terms of athleticism, he would add athleticism to the middle of the field, and he would be able to get, because he's broken up some passes. So would it be crazy to go that route? And then you said Tremont Williams played well in the slot in his last couple of years. He even played a little bit of safety. Maybe you get Tremont in the game like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I think you have options, and that's where the reality comes in, is that maybe we're putting too much pressure on Tyrann Mathieu to be great again. Because when he's healthy in 13, 14, 15, he's been great. And so we're putting that pressure and expecting that same thing. And I'm as guilty as anybody else in that we just expect him to be Tyrann Mathieu again. Oh, well, he's the Honey Badger. He's going to be back out there and he's going to be playing at this all pro level that he did for, you know, almost 3 years. And he just, that's not who he is right now. And honestly, I don't know if after the knee surgeries and the rehabs and everything else, if he's ever going to get there again.
And that's a fair question, considering last year he was really invisible. And also, there were many times, and people will fight me on this, he was a liability a lot of times last year. Teams picked on him. I remember specifically San Francisco going at Tyrann Mathieu with Jeremy Curley and beating him. This year has kind of been the same thing. So I don't know if that's the answer, and I don't know what the impact would be should they they've already lost Marcus Golden and his energy. I don't know how the defense would respond to see Tyrann Mathieu, who is kind of still their heart and soul on that team defensively, taken out of the lineup. Because I don't want to replace Bethea. Because Bethea's already playing, he's the nickel guy that comes in. He doesn't play in the slot, but he's playing lesser snaps. I'm not going to take Tyvon Branch out of the game. So you've got to reduce snap. If you want Tremon Williams to play, you've got to reduce the snaps for Mathieu or for Bethel, one or the other. And really, either way is a good thing. To be honest, to be perfectly honest, there's. Reducing one of those guys' snaps is going to be, but I'm not going to say that Tremon Williams is definitely the answer, because we did see him get beat for a 41-yard pass to Mike Evans. Granted, Mike Evans, but nonetheless, it's not like Tremon Williams is a shutdown cornerback. He is potentially a number one. He used to be a number one, but I mean, he was unsigned in training camp.
Right, and that's the reality. Is it always going to be? It's you're not always going to get everything out of these guys, and that's the reality. And so you can't create a perfect roster as much as we want to. So you're going to have to figure out what flaws you can mask, what flaws you can live with the best. And so right now the Cardinals have continued to play basically the same guys. They're thinking about bringing Tremon Williams in. Does that mean that they're going to bench Bethel? Does that mean they're moving Bethel inside? They're going to move Mathieu around more. I don't know what it means. I think Sunday's going to tell us a lot, because the Rams do a lot of different things in terms of offense and offensive looks. And so we'll see, you know, kind of where they go with all of that. But I do think a move needs to be made. I'm just not willing to go out on to what is the best move that needs to be made.
The couple of other changes that have happened officially, Earl Watford, now the starter at right guard over Evan Bame. That was something you brought up on the show a couple of weeks ago that I, for some reason, didn't even cross my mind, is the fact that he was brought in to challenge Evan Bame. He's now the starter, which, to be honest, is disappointing about Bame, though they were playing him out of position. They discovered he's not a good guard. They discovered that he's simply not a good guard. And Bruce Arians still believes he's going to be a really good center, but they have a good center in A.Q. Shipley, so they had to do something. Now, Watford, by no means was he a special player last year, and the fact he was cut before the season started and available makes you wonder, well, how much good is an answer? But he does at least temporarily cut down on some mental problems and perhaps some of the penalty issues that Bane's been getting into. Do you see this as a good idea and perhaps the answer moving forward? And, well, could Watford potentially play himself into staying with the Cardinals after this year?
That's a fair question, and And I think it really depends on what they think of Upati. I'm still of the belief that they're going to leave him on IR for the year. And so your offensive line that you see right now, I think, is what you're going to play the last 11 games with, hopefully. And so when you look at it from that instance, I would hope that for Steve Keim, he would look at that. And if they are successful, let's say Adrian Peterson runs for 800 to 1,000 yards in the last 11 games. Let's say Carson Palmer stays healthy and upright. And, you know, you and I don't have to have a discussion of whether or not he's going to make it through a season anymore. I would think that if you're Steve Keim, the priority becomes locking up, maybe not long term, but at least for 2018, Boone and Watford to continue that for at least one more year. You talk to Veldheer and say, are you willing to stay one more year, play out the last year of your contract? Because I know we've talked a lot about cutting Veldheer and moving on from Veldheer, but I think at some point you have to have some continuity within your offensive line. And cutting Veldheer means you're again trying to find a new right tackle. So 2015 was Bobby Massey, 2016 was DJ Humphreys, 2017 is Jared Veldheer, and now you're talking 2018. So in four consecutive seasons, you're going to be looking for a right tackle. I would just hope that if this season plays out like last week did, and I'm not saying they're going to go, you know, 13-3 and Adrian Peterson is going to run for, you know, 1,300 yards in 11 games. What I'm saying is if they're able to provide stability, open running lanes, and protect Carson Palmer, I think you're okay with maintaining the status quo, so to speak. You lock up Boone and Watford. Maybe you just give them 1 or 2 year deals and see if they'll take them. But that should be the priority. So I think if this offensive line plays well, it should be everybody the same. That should be the priority, not just Earl Watford staying at right guard.
And then the other move that was made was, and it happened on the depth chart that was released today on Tuesday, Hassan Reddick has officially become a starter at outside linebacker. And this comes even just a couple of days after Bruce Arians praised how well Curry Martin played. Didn't show up in the stat sheet, but Martin's ability, apparently, you know, his play at setting the edge in the running game has been very strong. But we saw improvement from Hassan Reddick after his first game was produced basically nothing in terms of pressure. He, according to Pro Football Focus, had four pressures total, including three quarterback hits, and he was about a half second of getting at least half a sack. So I like what's going in the right direction. I don't know if his role is going to be any different, because I still think that Reddick probably, I don't know if he'll be out there in base packages, but perhaps he is. I still think the role he will have is for their nickel, with Martin's coming in for the base packages because he's stronger and what he knows the position. But I think this is really positive for Reddick, especially for what they were hoping from him this year.
Right. Is this the new Matt Shaughnessy type thing?
Totally. Coming up next on Rise Up City Red, we're gonna look ahead to the stretch of games, and we're gonna talk about the Rams, just how important this part is. So that's coming up next on Rise Up City Red. We're back on Rise Up City Red, and we now enter what I believe is the defining, at least thus far, it is the defining stretch of the season. The Cardinals didn't get off to a good start, but they're 3-3, and now they have three straight games against the NFC West. Let's be honest, is there a more important stretch of the season that we can look at the calendar between now and the end of the year? Is there a more important stretch of the season right now than the three games coming up?
No, I don't think so. And because they're all NFC West games, first off. But second, they're all games that will define where they are within the pecking order of the NFC West. And so, again, you win on Sunday in London, and all of a sudden you're at worst the second best team in the division. Then you get San Francisco. I believe San Francisco's next, correct? And then it's the short week. So you get San Francisco next. That's a very difficult game because it's surrounded by a lot of bad circumstances, I think is the best way to put it. You know, obviously coming back from London, then you're going on the road, you play Seattle at home, and a couple days later, it's one of those situations where yes, they have a bye, so they have a couple weeks off, but you're coming out of the bye, you have to go to San Francisco, and you know, especially if you win that Los Angeles game, you know that game on Thursday night is at home against Seattle. It's going to be for first place in the NFC West. So that San Francisco game, especially if the 49ers are 0-7 at that point, or maybe even 0-8 on the road in San Francisco. That's just one of those games where you go, ugh, I don't like anything about this.
Well, and to be honest, when we looked at the schedule to begin, when it was released back in April, people were disappointed about the fact that they play the 49ers coming out of the bye. You sort of wish to have a higher level competition, like a road game in Seattle after the bye. That way you get the 2 weeks to prepare. I think now the way the season is gone, the way that San Francisco has played this year, because let's be honest here. The Cardinals aren't exactly a juggernaut. They are a minus 39 on the season in point differential, and they're 3-3. San Francisco at 0-6 is a minus 33. So they have a better point differential than the Cardinals. They've been really close. Now they've moved on for Brian Hoyer, so who knows what happens with C.J. Beathard. But that game becomes very important, and right now I am very glad the Cardinals have 2 weeks to prep for it, because that will be a very, very easy game to lose. Arian said as much. They're going to be scary to play in San Francisco. They're a hungry, physical team. They're bad, but they've been close in all their games, and they're going to figure out how to win one or two of these games coming up. And I'm glad that they have the bye to prepare for that. So a perfect scenario is this: they win in London, which gets them over 500, and I think two wins in a row will give them a little bit of mojo that they've missing. They get the bye, they go to San Francisco, pick up another win. I don't care how they win, but they win. You know, they're then 5-3 with the chance to then go 6-3 and then be really, really in the mix, not only in first place in the NFC West, but in the mix in the NFC. And here's the thing. My statement is this: the Cardinals must win two of these three games no matter what. And if they don't, their season basically is done, because that will essentially take them completely out of the NFC West picture, in my opinion. Seattle's going to finish strong, even with the deficiencies that they have. They must win two out of these three games, and probably, if they want to make a statement, win all three.
Right, because
if they don't, they're done.
Two of three, that's what's so interesting, is two of three only puts you at 5-4. But I think 5-4 after the first 5 weeks is a lot better than 5-4 at the beginning of the season, if that makes sense.
Right. But it also makes them 3-1 in the NFC West, which is the critical part. I every year I say this. If you want to even have a chance at winning the division, you got to win four games in the division. Guaranteed. You have to win four.
Yeah. And so I think when it's all said and done, this is, as you said, the defining technically 4 weeks, but, you know, 3 weeks of games over 4 weeks. And it's not even over 4 weeks because they have that Thursday night game. So, you know, they have – it's going to be the defining time of who they are as a team and who they are as we kind of open the show about. Are they contenders again? Like, are they contenders? And this isn't us sedating their contenders. We're asking the same question. Like, are they contenders? Because I think if they win – or, sorry, if they lose on Sunday – they're going to come out and beat San Francisco, and then we're going to just continue to play this ping pong game of win, or, you know, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, lose. So then you're going to kind of continue to ping pong the whole season. And then, you know, do we want another 7-9, 8-8 team again? You know, do we even want a 9-7 team that doesn't make the playoffs? Like, it's getting to the point where you want them to win and be a playoff team, or you kind of just want them to lose and be able to figure out what they're going to do in the future. Because I feel like we saw it this offseason, they dwelled on a lot of what ifs. And so you don't want them dwelling on those what ifs again. So I would just like some clarity on whether or not this team is a contender. And I think Sunday's going to offer that, because if they win on Sunday, I really do think they're going to come focused into San Francisco and win that game. That Seattle game is going to be a coin flip. It always is. It's a coin flip. It's a Thursday night game. Road teams in Thursday night games this year are like playing at just a ridiculous rate right now. Oh, and winning. So it's not necessarily like, oh, it's a Thursday night game for them too, and they have to come to Arizona. Well, that's been the recipe for the visitors winning right now in the 2017 NFL season. So, you know, I think more than just they need to win two of these next three, I think they have to win these next two to set up that Seattle game, not as a must win because they have to find a way to win that game, but it has to set it up for, okay, if they lose, they're still at 5-4. They're still right there in the division, because even if Seattle wins all their games and then beats the Cardinals and the Cardinals only lose to Seattle, they're only going to be two games back. Like, they're only two games back still. Right. So that there's with seven games to play. So that's plenty of time. But if you go in there and you lose to Los Angeles or San Francisco, one or the other, and you have to win, I think you're, again, you're putting all your eggs in one game basket, and all of a sudden you're fighting for your life. And that's when disappointment and those things start to come in. So I agree with your statement. Your statement's absolutely correct. They have to win two of these next three games. But in my mind, they have to win these next two games to make this third game. And this is hard to understand, but I'm trying the best I can to explain it. To make this third game not a must win. They can't go into that Seattle game with their season on the line, because the letdown of a loss, I think, would be too great to overcome for the entirety of the rest of the season.
Exactly. And if going into that game, you know, 5-3, potentially, especially if they have the right pieces in place, they're still healthy. Adrian Peterson's playing well. Robert Kendiche's back. Hassan Reddick's improving. It does set them up potentially. A win could propel them into a run of some sort. And really, in an NFC where, no, aside from Philadelphia, no one else is impressing, they could potentially do that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it was the Cardinals were kind of, if we looked at the 2015 season, it was that win in Seattle that catapulted that run the rest of the way. And if the Cardinals can put themselves in position for that, that'll be exactly what they need. And kind of alleviate some of the concerns that everyone has, right? Because right now, they're just, aside from that start against Tampa Bay, they've not been a good team at all.
No, and I think that's fair. And I think, you know, any rational fan is going to agree with that thought. that they just, they haven't been a good team. And so they, and again, I think the other thing is they only played three good quarters. Let's not act like they played a full game yet. So, and so that's good and bad. There's still room to improve off of that. But then you also wonder, is this a team that can play four full quarters? Because we've seen in losses to Detroit and to Dallas that they haven't been able to play four full quarters against good teams. And I don't think Tampa Bay is necessarily in those other two teams category, but they haven't been able to play full games against good teams. And in turn, they have lost those games. So, you know, did they get by because Tampa Bay is just not a very good team? Like, is that what happened? And so now when you look at it, you know, are there concerns coming out of this game, or, and we're just kind of glossing over them because we finally got the offense we've been waiting for 6 weeks. So that's going to, like I said, I really think this Sunday is going to tell us a lot about the rest of the season.
And so let's talk about this Rams game. Where do you see the Cardinals having issues, or where do you see them lining up good, well against them? I mean, you look at the offense on, and so if you look, think of, you got Todd Gurley, number one. Can the Cardinals contain him this year? Because he kind of looks, like I said earlier in the year, Todd Gurley looks like he was supposed to look last year, and even more so. So he's kind of like this year's David Johnson. No disrespect to Kareem Hunt. Can the Cardinals contain him the way they're using him?
Well, and that's the thing, is I don't know if this defense can contain. I mean, they struggled against Doug Martin. You know, they struggled against the Eagles' entire team. So can they contain? I don't know. Like, can they contain? I don't know if they can contain the Rams as a whole. I'm not worried about any running back per se as a runner, but I am worried about a, like you said, a complete package that Gurley has been this season and that he has become in this league and as a player. And so I think when that's all said and done, you have to be concerned not just about Gurley, but about the Rams offense, because it has been very multifaceted through this season. And so
it has been, and you look at that, they got the improved receiving corps. They got Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods and Tavon Austin and Cooper Kupp, who is apparently everyone who is involved or has any interest in the NFL draft is everyone's favorite. Do they have the secondary to limit these guys? I mean, Tavon Austin, he's trouble and bad and good, and but you never know. But say you who's in the slot? Who's Tyron going to cover? Is he going to cover Sammy Watkins? Is he going to cover Robert Woods? Is he going to cover Tavon Austin? How is that matchup going to work? Is it going to be Bethel, Tremont Williams? Patrick Peterson's going to take someone out of the game. It's just a matter of who that is. And we assume that'll probably Sammy Watkins. He's going to line up against most of the time. But can the Cardinals cover the receivers?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. But I think the other thing is the Rams' offensive line's really good. So I don't think Andrew Whitworth, their 35-year-old left tackle that they signed from Cincinnati, has allowed a sack all season. So Chandler Jones is going to have his handful. Now, they moved him around much more this year or this last game than they have earlier this year because, you know, there's no Marcus Golden. So now you have to create opportunities for Jones. And so in that sense, it's kind of what we went back to earlier. Is any secondary going to be able to cover any wide receiver group for an extended period of time? And I don't really know if they will. And so, you know, it's going to be who ends up kind of being the guy that makes those plays. And so for me, I think when you look at it, they're going to really need the entire secondary to step up and make plays. And so can they get enough from whoever's defending Cooper Kupp? Can they stop Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee, who have both had nice seasons so far? And so overall, I just think that the defense is going to have to show that they can do it. And they did against bad defenses. They just haven't done it against good or bad offenses. They just haven't done it against good offenses yet. And unfortunately, Los Angeles's offense has been good so
far. Really good offenses here.
And then the other thing is, can they stop Aaron Donald? I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And the answer is no. Nobody can. So can they do enough to limit Aaron Donald so that he is not the deciding factor in this game? And that's what this all boils down to offensively. That's what, you know, we're going to get all of this from our viewing of this new offensive line. And can they hold up against the best interior defensive player in the NFL, especially, you know, now with J.J. Watt injured? So that's the more intriguing question to me, because I don't think they're going to be able to stop them consistently on defense. So
they've got to be able to put up points, and that defense has been inconsistent. But here's the reason why: it's new. Rams haven't run a 3-4 before in any reason. In fact, the Cardinals are going to face a little bit of a challenge because I see Indies runs 3. They've barely faced any 3-4 teams this year at all. So it's going to be give them a different look. And Wade Phillips defenses, we're now getting to the midpoint of the season, nearly the midpoint of the season, which means they're going to come together and be really good really soon.
Exactly. And so that I think that's another kind of reason why it's important to win this game too, because you're getting LA at a good point where they might be slightly overconfident. They're still finding their way defensively. So maybe you can do enough to win this game, because I think as the season goes along, as you said, Wade Phillips is going to continue to put his stamp on that team. And then all of a sudden you're going to see a dynamic defense. So you want to win these games now before it's late in the season. And as we talked about with the Seattle game, they have to win a game. So, you know, take advantage now, find a way now. And then you get them at home. And so hopefully that's a recipe for success.
So can the Cardinals possibly, could they do what they did last week, this week, in terms of the running game? Are they going to be able to run on this interior?
I think so. I think so. I think they're still, you know, and a lot of times, and this is stupid cliche stuff, but running the football is a mentality, and Adrian Peterson is that mentality. That's his mentality. I'm going to run on you. You're not going to stop me. And so when you look at this game, they have to go in there with that mentality. Because the other thing is this, you don't want to get into a point where you're having to block Aaron Donald 45, 50 times on pass rush attempts, because he will wreck your entire offensive line. So you don't want to get to that point. So I think they not only will be able to run the ball, but I think that they have to continue to try to run the ball, whether or not it's working early. They need to rely on what Adrian Peterson has done throughout his entire career and make it a priority to continue to run the football.
And I think that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Rip podcast. We've got a little bit more than an hour, but I mean, we had a couple of weeks worth of stuff to talk. So we thank you for listening. That we've talked about the addition of Adrian Peterson, his performance. We talked about the win. We talked about the depth chart. We talked about this stretch of games and the matchup against the Rams this weekend. Coming back next week when we meet again, hopefully we can then, because we'll be at the midpoint of the season, the Cardinals will be on their bye, and I think it'll be time to talk about grades and reactions to how they've done. So yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this up. This edition of the Rise Up Sea Grid podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us all over the internet. In particular, make sure you head on over to iTunes, to Apple Podcasts. If you're an Apple user, an iPhone user, make sure you subscribe to the show, and we'd love it if you give us a 5-star rating. Android users, make sure that you have found us at Stitcher or TuneIn Radio, anywhere where those fine podcast platforms where you can get those episodes sent directly to you without having to look for them. Cardinals go on the road. They're in England right now. Hopefully come back next week, and we're talking about a team that's over 500 the first time since 2015. On behalf of the Rise Up Sea Rip podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We will talk to you next week. Go Cardinals and Rise Up Sea Rip.